People don't take trips. Trips take people. John Steinbeck.
But anyway, so we finally got to the part of that section that they had no longer cleared the trail. So we're back into willows that I've never hiked in willows like that before. They were taller than both of us. They're about eight feet tall and like completely crisscrossed across the trail. So you're pushing through. So it's a full body experience. And it's raining, remember? So like, there's no dry, not even the option of being dry. So pushing through this and like getting the willow wap to the face, et cetera. And we had kept like okay spirits until it started to snow.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right. This week, we're venturing back up to our neighbors in the north to talk to a Canadian thru-hiker with some great experiences and big aspirations. And you know what? She also lives and teaches in Jasper National Park. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Bridget Scott. How's it going, Bridget?
Good. Thank you.
Am I pronouncing that correct, Bridget?
Yep. That's good.
Okay. Now, in all of your miles on the trail, have you picked up a trail name?
So my friends call me Scrambles, which is basically just my Instagram handle shortened, which is Rocky Mountain Scrambler, because that's what I like to do in the mountains is scramble up the peaks and such. And yeah, just slowly my friends that I hike with consistently and constantly just started calling me Scrambles, and that's just kind of stuck. So I don't know if that counts as a trail name, but that's what they call me.
Hey, if it's not your name and your friends call you that and it sticks, then we're going to go with Scrambles tonight.
Awesome.
Okay. And it has nothing to do with eggs.
No. All the jokes have been made. Yes.
Okay. All right. Hey, do you listen to the podcast at all?
I have. I can't remember which one I started with, but I've been enjoying them. I've just kind of gotten into listening to podcasts. It's, I guess, prepping for these through hikes, et cetera. There's a lot of good stuff out there. So that's how I found you. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. I just want to make sure that you're aware of a regular segment we do at the end of the episode called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. That's where I will turn to you and say, hey, Scrambles, what bit of trail wisdom can you share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better? So don't be surprised when we get there. And of course, I expect you to drop trail wisdom throughout the episode tonight, but you will be on the hook for the one at the end of the episode with the pro tip.
One so golden nugget.
That's right. Okay. So hey, let's go back a little bit. And I introduced you as living in Jasper National Park and teaching in Jasper National Park. So I'm intrigued right off the bat here. Tell me where do you live? How do you live in the national park? And how do you teach in the national park? Is there a school there?
Yeah. So we have a 7-12 school. We have about 200 students, I think. And National Park, Jasper, we have a pretty good tourist industry, obviously. And so the school is really there because of all the parents that come and work in the hospitality industry. We have a hospital. Our population of Jasper fluctuates with the seasonal workers, but I think we're around like a 5,000 people, and it's pretty small. It's the first school that I've worked at that they don't have any buses because everyone just walks to school, which is kind of awesome. And we're kind of in the middle of the in between two slightly bigger centers of Valmont and Hinton, and it's pretty freaking awesome.
And what do you teach?
I teach high school math and science right now. Yeah.
Math and science. You are you have multiple subjects under your belt.
Yeah. Super geek. Yeah. Mostly grade 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah.
Okay. And so is it a migrant population in that, you know, you have people changing in and out because of, you know, they work in the park or, and they leave, or is it a pretty stable population?
I'd say it's pretty stable. I don't think that it's any more or less migrant than the other schools that I've worked in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And I imagine with 200 kids, you probably know, I mean, all of the kids, right? That's not a big educational institution.
No, it's not. It's not the smallest that I've worked at, but it's kind of a nice happy medium where we don't have to do a lot of split grades. I know my students, and it's really nice when I get to teach them from like grade 8 or 9 all the way through to 12. It's pretty awesome.
Now with 200 students, you probably have what, 7 or 8 teachers total?
Yeah. I think there's like a dozen of us with the support staff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so do you also have teachers that are teaching kind of 2 subjects with English and social studies, and then you have some elective teachers?
Yeah. So, we've got a social English teacher, Mr. Brady, and then we're also a Francophone, or sorry, a French immersion school. So we've got those classes too. And we've got a 2 science teachers, English teachers and phys ed teachers. Actually, our bio teacher also teaches phys ed, and our chemistry physics teacher teaches shop. So everybody's right in there.
Multi-talented. Now, yeah. how do I get to be the PE teacher in Jasper National Park? I mean, how awesome, how incredible would that be? What a sweet gig.
Yeah, it's a pretty sweet gig. I think that it's pretty coveted too. Yeah.
Class, we're going hiking today.
Yeah,
there we go. Let's go.
We do. That's actually part of our school culture, which is awesome. Every fall, September, like 3rd week, each grade class goes for a hike. Mm-hmm. So I usually go with the 11s or 12s each year, and we just kind of cycle through. Like the grade 9s will go to Sulphur Hills, etc. Grade 12s go to Bald Hills, and it's awesome. So one of the Fridays, we just all pile in each grade their bus and head for the mountains.
Head for the mountains. Perfect. That's awesome. So I'm also in education. I was an English teacher, high school English teacher, and then a high school assistant principal, high school principal. And now I'm at the district office. Oh, nice. And, you know, it's a great, great career, great profession. Just so rewarding to be working with kids. I think the more you work with kids, the younger you stay. So
yeah, definitely.
Good work. All right. Hey, another segment. I'm going to surprise you with this. You don't know anything about this. So another segment we've been doing recently is current events. Okay. And so what I do is, you know, in the hours leading up to the interview, I scour the newspapers looking for some hiking, climbing, current events. And I've got a good one for us today.
Okay.
So this is off of backpacker.com. And this is the story of an Arizona hiker that fell 700 feet to his death while taking a selfie.
Ooh.
And he's not the first.
No,
he's not the first. Unfortunately, that's it's a common occurrence these days of people trying to get the best picture, trying to get in the best position and slipping and falling.
Yeah. That sucks. What a way.
Yeah. Any idea how many people fall victim to this?
Like per year?
Yeah.
Worldwide?
Worldwide.
Death by selfie? Selfie?
Death by selfie.
I want to go with like a solid dozen.
It's a little bit higher. I didn't do the math here, but there's a foundation that did some research into this, and they found that at least 379 people died from selfies between 2008 through 2021.
Okay.
Which roughly equates to one fatal accident, one fatal selfie every 12 and a half days.
Oh, damn. Wow.
Yeah, 379 doesn't sound like a whole lot over that time span, but then when you put it into that, you know, that frame of reference, 12, one every 12 and a half days, that's way too many.
Often. Yeah.
Now, U.S. is the second leading nation during that time span with 39 death by selfie. Can you guess which country is the first? You'll never get it.
It's not China.
No, not China. But you know what? That is a good guess because, you know, high population, right?
That's what I was going with.
you're on the right track. You're on the right track. It's not China.
India.
India. Exactly. You must be an educator. Nice job.
No things.
You have a glass. I have a beer glass that says I drink and I know things. That's what I do. So nice. I think that's a line from Game of Thrones. So
yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So when you're out there, I mean, don't risk it all by trying to get the perfect selfie. You know, it's better to be able to live and just describe it with your words than to, you know, die and then have somebody look at the picture afterwards on your camera.
Oh, that sucks.
Not good.
No.
Okay. All right. Hey, another segment we've been doing this season is the must bring gear review sponsored by the Ultralight Backpacking Gear Company, Outdoor Vitals. Here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike scrambles, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So scrambles, what is your must bring piece of gear out there?
Okay, so it's definitely not ultralight and it wouldn't keep me warm, but I would have to bring my camera. I would just feel lost without my camera to take pictures. So I use a Nikon D5500, which is just kind of like middle of the line with an 18 to 140 millimeter lens, but that's what I'd be super bummed if I didn't have.
Okay.
I don't know if that counts.
How come you just don't go with your iPhone camera?
So I did that one year, 2014. I'm like, screw this heavy camera. I'm just bringing my iPhone. And it was nice. It was nice to not lug the camera around. But then later going through the pictures, the quality is just, it's just not the same. So there's a bunch of hikes that I want to redo so that I can take actual camera pictures of to have.
And so does the Nikon D5500, is it really that big of a difference between an iPhone and its output?
Yeah, it is. Like if you just look at it on the iPhone, it can, and of course the iPhone now takes pretty good pictures. The video I think is has the leg up on the photos. Mm-hmm. But when you blow it up, like if you make it like I like to blow up pictures and hang them on my wall, and can't quite do that with the iPhones.
Yeah, those are some striking pictures behind you.
Thanks.
Beautiful.
That's one of my favorite ones. Actually, those are two. So people are gonna have to watch this on the YouTube instead of
that's right.
Podcast. So this is Devon Lakes up on Mount Willingdon. So this was the last day of August. I just thought the icicles were so awesome. And so we had camped down there and climbed the mountain. And then this is Snake Indian Falls in Jasper here, which is, what is it? 30 kilometer, 25 kilometer. Sorry, everything's going to be in kilometers. bike ride. We've hiked there and we've biked there. Neither were terribly enjoyable. However, the end result was spectacular. So
now if I zoom in on that, it looks like there's a few students there. Is that your students at the top of the waterfalls trying to take a selfie?
That's my husband. He's all the little people in my pictures is my hiking partner. He's awesome. And he'll go stand in the weird places. He's very safe. He'll I never make him do anything crazy.
Tell him no selfies at the top of waterfalls, please.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. How much does the Nikon weigh? How many pounds is this?
So 2 or 3 pounds, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Heavy enough. Now you said earlier it's not an ultralight item. No. Do you consider yourself to be an ultralight hiker?
I would have to say no. No, we're not. Like we've kind of made steps to get lighter and lighter, especially this summer with the through hike that we did. But maybe one day we'll get there. But my pack, I know you're gonna ask this question, but my pack usually ranges from 25 to 40 pounds, depending on what we're doing.
I thought you were gonna go kilos on me.
Oh, no. but yeah, so I don't think we're ultralight.
No. Okay. We've talked to a few folks that have gone really ultralight, you know, 6 or 7 pound base weight, but they're not built for comfort though in camp.
See, and I don't know, like the Canadian Rockies, you need some of those comforts. Like we need like the bigger sleeping bag, mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't go anywhere without my puffy. Those kinds of things I think are just inherently, it's going to weigh more. But yeah.
Right. Now, what is a luxury item that you would bring out on the trail that maybe not everybody brings?
So this summer, actually a couple of summers, but this summer, our favorite item, that I think we were the only one that we ran into on the Great Divide Trail, the GDT, was a tarp, an ultralight tarp. And, I could feel some people being like, why do you have a tarp? Like, what? But there was probably a good half dozen times that we had to hunker under that tarp because a hailstorm or a thunderstorm or a snowstorm blew over. And man, was it nice to have in those scenarios. And it was a Hyperlite was the brand, and I really enjoyed it.
Did you carry the tarp in addition to your tent? This is yeah. like an extra?
Yeah. Got and it's super, I can't remember how light it is, but it's like, sorry, what? 3/4 of a pound.
3/4 of a pound. We got some off camera help here.
Yeah.
from her hiking partner, Mark. Does Mark have a trail name?
Kind of, not really. Nothing really is stuck. Something like half
pipe. Eggs, scrambles eggs, and yeah. eggs.
Bacon.
Bacon, nice. Yeah. no, sorry, you said half pipe?
Yeah. A couple of years ago, he has had Crohn's for most of his life, and he ended up having a, emergency surgery and had his, colon removed. And, so we hiked that year. He hiked with a colostomy bag, and we did 375 miles that summer, which we thought was pretty awesome. So yeah, I call him Semicolon. We took our master's together in education, and semicolons are prevalent in all the paper writing, etc. So it just kind of
wow. We just shared a lot of information right there. I'm not sure if I need to have you sign a HIPAA form or something. I don't know. Well, semicolon, I don't see you there, but welcome to the show as well. All right. Thanks. Hey, I've got another segment we do called the hiking poll, and poll is spelled P-O-L-L, not P-O-L-E. I think it's very clever. I explain it all the time. Every time I introduce this, I explain it, and there's never any reaction to the guest from the guest. So, my occasional co-host Chopper, he gets a real kick out of that I love to explain this and point out how clever I am, and there's never any reaction. So I don't expect you to react. I'm just explaining it for our audience so they just live through that joy. Okay. This hiking poll will help me determine where you fall on the crazy scale from 1 to 100. 100 being completely sane, rational, normal person, and 1 being, you know, absolutely bonkers. So here we go. 6 questions. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Definitely trekking poles. I can't imagine. I have wonky knees, and the number of times that I would have face planted if I hadn't had poles probably counts into the hundreds, I'm sure. That may be an exaggeration, but yes, trekking poles.
Wonky knees is also a nice trail name. Just, you know, in case scrambles doesn't work out.
Yeah, I like okay. it.
Boots or trail runners?
Trail runners. I used to do the boots. And then I...
Wait. Say boots again.
I was going to say, damn it, I said boots. Yeah, no doubt about it. But I... Related to the wonky knees, I've had a couple of knee surgeries, ACL, meniscus, all that fun stuff. And I tried to go back to wearing boots, and they bugged my knees. I think they were just heavy enough that I just was in pain all the time. So I switched over to trail runners, and the knee pain subsided. And so, yeah, I've stuck with trail runners ever since.
Okay. Do you have a favorite brand of trail runners?
I really like the Ultras. I have a wide foot, and they seem to do it. I've tried some of the other ones. The Salomons and Hokas are just too tight on my foot, and the Ultras just make my feet happy.
Yeah. Yes. Ultras are a popular choice. I've got a pair. They are fantastic. I did run into one of our guests. I'm trying to remember who it was. Who was very specific and said that he had a narrow foot and he preferred a narrow toe box, which was, you know, just kind of struck me as funny, but I forget which guest that was, but yeah, Ultra's popular choice. Okay. Tent, tarp, or hammock?
Tent, definitely. Once again, I don't know, this may be the Canadian, but the number of bugs and just the weather, I like me a tent. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So the bugs exist up in Canada as well.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. Which are the worst bugs in Canada?
It's really a toss up between the mosquitoes and the black flies. I can't say one or the other. They're both equally horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those little flies that fly in front of your face and try to get in your eyes. Those are miserable as you're hiking. Of course, yeah. I tell my wife that when we're hiking, you just take a deep breath, they all go away. So just inhale. Yeah. Inhale.
It's a protein too.
That's right. That's right. And what brand of tent do you use?
Well, we had a Big Agnes Tiger Wall. And then it's the zippers kind of started going. So then halfway through our through hike this last summer, we switched over to a Nemo. I don't remember. He was trying to feed me. Just say it.
Dagger.
He was like going like this. Dagger. Yeah. Nemo Dagger. And
for our listeners out there, she just imitated, you know, stabbing somebody, stabbing motion. Yeah. So it's like charades. It's charades and a podcast all in one. You're missing out if you're not watching the YouTube. So tune in.
Gotta watch the YouTube. Yeah.
Sounds like one word, two syllables. Yeah. Got it.
But yeah, and then we've actually just ordered a new one, Zed Packs. I don't know, it's a Zed Pack.
Triplex.
A triplex. There we go. We like the three person tent. I'm only 5'4", but Mark is 6'1", so just that extra room is just nice, especially when you're spending that many nights in a tent together.
And for my non-Canadian listeners out there, let me just translate Zed Packs. That is Z Packs.
Oh, shoot.
Z Packs. Yes, this is good. I like this. This is perfect. Yeah, we have some friends who are Canadian, and I love listening to them talk. I love their sayings.
We haven't even started talking about toques yet.
Toques?
Toques.
What are toques? I haven't heard of toques. No.
So you guys call them warm hats?
Okay, warm hats.
Some Americans say it was a warm hat. Look at
beanies. Beanies?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Like with the fun little thing on top.
Yeah. The ball on top. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are toques. And where does that term come from?
So I'm pretty sure it's like Quebec, like a French, thing. I remember one time somebody telling me
that. Now somebody in Quebec, are they Quebecian? What is the term?
Québécois. Yeah.
Okay. So blame it on the Québécois. Is that the plural? Is that an S? There's already an S there. It's silent, right? So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll go with yes.
Okay. When in doubt, blame the French Canadians. Okay. Got it. Are you from Quebec?
No. I'm originally, sorry, I shouldn't have been so
that was emphatic right there.
Yeah.
No, I am not.
He's going to listen to this and be like, excuse me. No, I'm from Saskatchewan originally, Prairie Girl. So living in the mountains is even that much cooler.
Saskatchewan, that sound, I mean, a boy from Southern California, an American who hears Saskatchewan, that sounds very rustic, very, very woodsy, very, you know, remote. Is that just a stereotype?
Maybe a stereotype. Remote would probably, compared to the bigger centers. Saskatchewan only really has a couple of big centers. It's very flat. It's got hills too. The Saskatchewanians will kill me if I just say it's flat.
Saskatchewanians?
Yep. Saskatchewans. The wheat fields, prairies, all that stuff. And then north of the north half of the province is the Shield. So there's tons of lakes and rock and all that. But
okay. So it sounds like most of it is like the Kansas and Nebraska.
Yeah, I think so.
Type area. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of wheat.
A lot of wheat. Okay. Where were we in the hiking pole here? We took a wrong turn here somewhere. That's all right. It's good.
We were talking about shoes. Oh no, tent,
tarp, or hammock. You said tent. We went with dagger, charades, and then further off into the weeds. Okay. Yeah. Sleeping bag or quilt?
So I've always had a sleeping bag. I really like the Mummy because it's just so nice and cozy. But lately I've just been sleeping. I've been so hot. So I think this year we're going to check out some quilts. And just to save the, like, my sleeping bag, I think is almost 3 pounds. It's so lovely, but it'd be nice to go a little bit lighter there, especially if I'm sleeping hot. So
a lot of choices out there for quilts, but if I may suggest our sponsor, Outdoor Vitals, they make a great series of quilts that are just fantastic.
Okay.
So,
okay. I'll check it
check
out.
Check them out. Okay. All right. This question is very important. Scramble. With an S? Plural. Yeah. Like there's two of you. Okay.
Yes.
This question is very important. Scrambles. This really helps me sort out the crazy from the same people. Okay. So stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
Stove, hands down. I've watched videos on the cold soaking and that blows my mind. Stove always. I need a hot coffee in the morning and I need a hot meal for supper.
Yeah. The cold soak people, I mean, they are adamant. They will try and convince you that is the best way to go. I mean, they'll sell you on all kinds of different features. You know, you get it set up and you put it in your backpack and you hike. And then when you get to camp, you're ready to eat. I mean, there's no boiling water, no setting up or anything. You're just good to go, but it's cold.
It's cold. Exactly.
It's cold.
Yeah.
I tried. I really tried. I gave it a shot. One of my guests, Backcountry Foodie, she gave me a subscription to her website with all kinds of recipes, backcountry recipes for stove and stoveless. And I gave it a shot. I 3 days, I couldn't do it. 3 days in, I said, I need a stove.
Good for you. You tried. Yeah.
I tried.
Okay. So that's good. Cause now I don't have to try because I don't want to.
That's right. Yeah. Don't give in to the pressure from the cold soak people.
Okay.
Okay. All right, last question. Long trails, should it be hiked northbound, southbound, or flip-flop?
So I don't really feel strongly about this either way. I feel like it's just kind of depends on the scenario. Like, for example, the GDT that we plan to do this summer, living in Jasper, I wanted to hike home both times. So we went from the border up to Jasper and then got a ride and then hiked back home. Cause I wanted to just hike home. That was the thing. Mm-hmm. And then, we're looking to do the PCT this year. And, we were going to go Nobo. But we would asking for April to June off and then probably part of September didn't seem like an easy sell to the school division. So we figured by going Sobo and then we would just have to ask for September, October, November would be an easier sell. And so that's kind of what controlled that.
So, okay. Yeah.
So my answer is I don't have an answer.
You don't have an answer on that. Okay. What are the advantages? I've heard this before. What are the advantages of hiking home? I know there's, you know, I've talked to people who live in Georgia. And so they did a southbound AT hike because they were just hiking home. What is the attraction there?
So like maybe just like mentally just be like, I'm hiking home. And it was really cool when we had hiked a lot of the Great Divide Trail, just like in pieces here and there. But there was a few sections that were kind of brand new to us. But when we got to, like, we came up and over a pass and we recognized some of the mountains, it was just a really cool moment of like, we're in our home territory now and hiking home. I don't know, it's just cool.
Yeah, I think it's a mental strategy, right? I mean, I'm going over there. I'm going home. I'm hiking home. It's not like you're hiking 2,600 miles away from where you are and then have to travel all the way back. You do that traveling at the beginning part and then you're just heading home. And so I think that that mental trick is helpful for some people.
Yeah. And we walked right up to our front door both times. Like,
coming wow.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's cool. Now it brings me to maybe a follow-up question here. We'll include this in the hiking post. This is a new question. is a long through hike, is it more of a mental challenge or is it more of a physical challenge?
See, I, because of my wonky knees, part of me thinks like it's physical because you have to make sure that you're, you know, not falling apart. But I think maybe for regular people that have good knees, probably mental. The GDTU was only 2 months. So we didn't ever really like get to the point where we were mentally or physically like done. I could see like at the end, like day 60, when we were hiking home, finally, I did kind of have the thought of like, well, yep, this is nice. I'm done, you know? So yeah, I'm going to go with mental. Sorry about the kind of went all round there, but.
That was a very circuitous answer there. And you were so close to a perfect score for a through hiker on the hiking pole. You were so close to an 80. 80 is a perfect score for a through hiker because we automatically deduct 20 points because you're a through hiker. I mean, that's a certain level of crazy right there. It's right. That's part of the deduction there. So I'm going to give you a 77. Solid 77. That's a, you know, C+ in the education.
Okay. That does kind of hurt. The math teacher in me is just like, oh.
I mean, a 77 out of 80. You couldn't have scored higher than 80.
Out of 80?
Yeah, because I took 20 points off right off the top. Okay. You couldn't get higher than 80.
I'm satisfied.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Very good. And speaking of school, what do you think how is the school going to respond when you ask for time off to hike the PCT? Because it's a school in Jasper National Park, are they going to say, oh yeah, hiking. Yeah, it's automatic. We're going to say yes. We'll give you that time off.
Well, I'm really hoping that they're like, hey, sounds cool. We handed in our letters of request 2 weeks ago, and thinking, you know, lots of time to find a replacement. My husband works. He's also a teacher in Hinton, which is 45 minute drive away, which is a bigger center. So I don't think it's going to be a problem for him to get a replacement. But me as a senior math teacher, teaching pre-calculus and such, might be a little bit more of a challenge. So I think as long as they can find somebody, I'm hoping that they'll give us the 3 months off. But yeah, so hopefully their answer is yes.
Yeah, pre-calc, just have the PE teacher teach that. You'd be all right. Now, what does semicolon teach?
So he's a shop phys ed guy, but right now he's doing a science 7 and math 7 gig. It's pretty sweet in Hinton. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Hinton's still in Jasper?
It's outside of the park.
Oh, that's
kind of in the foothills.
That doesn't qualify for the sweet gig. It's not in the national park. I'm sorry, semicolon.
But he does have like, it's gotta be the prettiest commute on the face of the planet, going out of the park and then coming back into the park. So
does he listen to the John Freaking Muir pod on his commute?
Yeah, he does actually. Yeah, he was listening to he was telling me, I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, he does.
Nice. I'm gonna have to give semicolon a shout out occasionally on different episodes just to make sure he's still listening. So
there you go.
Okay. All right. So that was the hiking pole. Let's back up a little bit before we get too far down the trail here, and let's hear about your background, where you grew up, what kinds of sports and hobbies you were involved in as a kid, and how you got involved in the through hiking cult.
Okay, so I mentioned us from Saskatchewan, Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Moose Jaw.
Moose Jaw.
Moose Jaw. They have minor league hockey team in Moose Jaw.
Yeah, the Warriors.
The Warriors. They used to be. I think they were affiliated with the LA Kings. Am I incorrect there? Because I remember hearing about LA Kings players in the NHL that came from Moose Jaw.
That could very well be. Yeah, they could have been drafted out there. Yeah, we'll go with yeah. Sure.
Okay. All right. If you say it with confidence, right? Yeah. You say it with confidence, people are gonna believe it. As a teacher, we learn that, right? Just have to stay a day ahead of the kids. You'd be all right.
Yeah.
Say it with confidence.
But yeah, so Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, I played basketball and volleyball and fastball. Eventually, I played fastball to competitively till my 20s until I blew out my knee, and then I went to the University of Regina and got my bachelor's and master's in education.
University of where?
Regina.
Regina.
Like Queen Regina, but it's
got it. It's pronounced Regina. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And you played professional basketball?
No, just in high school basketball and volleyball, and then competitive women's basketball. Basketball, okay. Like slow pitch or like fast. Oh, pitch.
Fast pitch softball.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. We just call basketball. Fastball. It's called fastball. If I can, that makes sense. Yeah. Canadians got it going on. That's great. What position in basketball did you play?
Shortstop.
Okay. I thought you said basketball. You said fastball. Yeah. It's not basketball.
Yeah. No, I did play basketball.
Okay.
But just in high school. And then it was women's competitive fastball.
Okay. Now, when you say women's competitive fastball,
yeah.
You're not talking about a Parks and Rec league.
No.
No. Like what is? Go ahead.
We went to provincials, which I guess would be, we went to states.
Okay.
I don't know, whatever the high level that would be, and competed with the different, we never did make it to nationals, but yeah.
Got it. So you were a shortstop, a lot of range. You cover a lot of ground out there at shortstop. Good yeah. defensive player.
Yep. Yeah.
Like how'd you blow out your knee?
So I was the weirdest, like, it's not a good story, but I was just jumping for a low liner. And as I jumped, I felt my knee like do this weird, like separation thing. And I remember thinking like, that's not good. And then when I landed down on it, my femur and my shin, like they didn't line up on my, like around my patella, and they slammed down on each other, which, hurt like a, you know what, and, I was done. And I went to the doctor, and they just said, oh yeah, you pulled your patellar tendon. I'm like, okay. Cause you know, I'm 20 and I'm like, sure. And so they're like, 6 weeks rehab and you'll be right back at it. And 6 weeks. And I tried to go back, and the very first I hit the ball and I was running to first, and I stretched out to hit it. And my knee did the same thing. And I just like jammed it again. And so later I found out that, yeah, my ACL was gone and that I was like giving myself bone bruises, which I didn't even know was a thing, but it's kind of a serious thing. And so then eventually I just decided I didn't want to continue hurting myself and I would retire from.
So you took up hiking.
I did. That's kind of that happened. I think it was the year that I finished my bachelor's degree. So I got my first teaching job. And so fastball would always start in about the end of April and go to September. And of course I would be teaching then, just too busy. So when July and August rolled around, I decided to just, head for the mountains and, yeah, really took up hiking.
Fair to say you jumped right out of your ACL.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
And right, Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I didn't even know that's what had happened until, actually 2017. I was skiing and I came down and I hit a mogul hard, funny. It was this weird like weather where it was like the clouds were low and the lights all weird. Anyway, I jammed it again and they took me down the mountain, super embarrassing. And when I went to the doctor, this time I went to a specialist and he said, oh yeah, you tore your ACL. And then when they got my MRI, they're like, this was not recent. You have not had an ACL for many years. And then evidently that was my left knee. And then they always, if anybody's ever had knee injuries, they're always like constantly comparing both knees. And the doctor kept comparing my knees and I'm like, have you not had enough of my knees? And he called another guy in. And so they're doing this. I'm like, I must have really cool knees. And so they called a third guy in and wow. He was like the top guy. And he's like, oh, you've ruptured your ACL in your other knee. And I'm like, no, I haven't. And he's like, I can almost guarantee you that this is like a complete tear of the ACL. I'm like, okay, but I have no idea, you know, when I've done that. And so they sent me for another MRI, and yep, this one was ruptured too, like completely, and had been so for years. So,
wow,
so I got wonky knees.
Scrambles. You've got a unique skill set.
Yeah.
You know, jump right out of your ACLs, you hike, and you teach pre-calc. I mean, that is the complete package right there. So
the trifecta, yeah.
Yep. All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to hear about some hiking stories with scrambles and semicolons. Stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. The John Freakin' Muir Pod is sponsored by Outdoor Vitals, the ultralight backpacking gear company whose mission is to improve the mental, physical, and emotional health of mankind by facilitating impactful outdoor experiences. Outdoor Vitals creates innovative technical products with confidence-inspiring education that empower outdoor ultralight adventurers. Their focus on performance enables you to live ultralight with gear you can actually be confident with. Whether you're looking for an ultralight sleep system, shelter, or pack, or if you're looking for top-quality apparel for the trail, you can find it at Outdoor Vitals. Do yourself a favor. Live ultra light. And welcome back. We're talking to Scrambles, who is calling in from Jasper National Park up in Canada. What's the temperature right there right now?
It's probably about minus 10 degrees Celsius.
Do you know what that is in Fahrenheit?
Not too cold.
Probably 25?
Yeah.
20 sure. Degrees? Okay, sure. Yeah. We'll go. Yeah. Say it with confidence. There you go.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And I'm sure that there are a lot of towns in America with unique names. Small towns. I mean, small town America, it exists. I mean, there's a lot of small towns out there. A lot of our listeners, I'm sure, come from small towns, and I got nothing against small towns. Love small town living. But I'm just tickled by Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. How big is Moose Jaw?
Moose Jaw is about 30,000, 35,000. So they had, we had four high schools. Yeah. I don't know. bigger than Jasper.
What is the best thing to do? What is the most popular thing to do in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan?
So either walk the Waccamaw River, that's the hiking trails in Waccamaw, and or go see the tunnels under Main Street that were built by Al Capone.
Wait a second, Al Capone has connections to Moose Jaw?
Yep. Yeah, there's some cool, if you ever go, sign up for the tours. They take you down underneath, and there's all the tunnels and where they used to hide the booze and all that.
Who knew? I had no idea that Al Capone had connections to Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Yep.
And I think we also need to know how you and Semicolon met.
Both teachers.
So did you meet at a job site or in college training to be teachers?
At job site, we taught. We were friends and colleagues for the longest time. And then just eventually, one summer, I he used to work in the summers, crazy bastard. And I'm like, no, like summers are for decompressing from, you know, the 8 months or the 10 months of being with all the teenagers. Love you, teenagers. But, you know, I know they need a break from us too. So it's fair. But yeah, so I invited him on a couple of hiking trips and convinced him to come away from the dark side. And yeah.
So you made the first move. You invited him on your hiking trips.
Yep.
Nice. Yep.
Bold that way.
Very bold. Okay. So let's talk about your outdoor adventuring experience. And I understand it's been an evolution. I imagine you started off as day hikers, right?
Yeah.
And then kind of take us through that. I mean, how did you go from day hiking to through hiking to beyond?
Okay. Well, so if I go kind of back to ground zero, it would be in grade 11, there was an outdoor ed trip class, an outdoor ed class.
We're going back.
Grade 11. Back, Doc. Yeah. So that's when
I'm not commenting. That's not a comment on your age. It just struck me as funny. Oh. Back in grade 11.
Yeah, grade 11. That's when little Bridget started to love the mountains.
Little scrambles.
Yeah. They took us on a backpacking trip in Kananaskis, which is in Alberta. And I just remember thinking, like, what? This is something that people can do. Super cool. And then didn't really like that was the first kind of like little bloom in my brain. And then it wasn't until I finally had my first summer to myself that I didn't have to work a summer job to pay for student loans and such. Started heading to where we lived in Saskatchewan. So if you liked Moose Jaw, we had to go through Big Beaver is a town in southern Saskatchewan. There's also just I think it was west of there, Climax, the port of Climax. You had to go through Climax to get to Montana. So we would go through, and then it was much quicker to actually go through and across Montana to get to Glacier National Park than to get to Banff. And back in the day when the dollar was good, it was cost effective to camp in Montana. So that's where we really kind of, I'm like gapping out here, where we actually started our hiking career, as you call it, and just did a bunch of like camping in the bigger center. So in Glacier National Park, which is amazing. There's a couple of big centers, Two Medicine, Mini Glacier, West Glacier, Lake McDonald, that kind of thing. So we just kind of hunker down for a week and just do all the trails. And I bought all the books and all the books, the hiking books, and started kind of checking off all the day hikes. And we would do some longer day hikes. And there's one hike in Glacier that goes up and over the divide from Lake McDonald to the east side. I think it's almost, it's 20 some miles. And just as we went up and over and we went past some of these backcountry campgrounds, and we're like, well, gee, it'd be nice to actually stop here and kind of enjoy it as opposed to just having to like keep on going. So then we got into the backcountry camping and actually staying in the backcountry. And our first backcountry experience was a complete failure. We had like normal sleeping bags, like the big sleeping bags that probably weighed 8 pounds. We had, I think we had an external frame pack, and we had like the big sleeping pads, like that you'd get from Costco that were like, 2 feet wide strapped on. And we got, I think maybe, I don't know if we made a mile in, and we're like, this is stupid. We are going to make like, so yeah, we bailed, we came back out and just kind of did more day hiking stuff. And then bought some actual backcountry camping, not front country that we just walked into the backcountry camping. And yeah. And then
where did you get your backcountry gear? Was it, I mean, I'm not sure. Do they have REI in Canada?
So we have, it's called MEC, Mountain Equipment Co-op, but it's okay. The closest thing to an REI.
Uh-huh.
Because we spent so much time in the States in the summers, we actually got most of our stuff in the, what's that store in Whitefish?
The ski house.
Ski house. Yeah. There's one in Kalispell too. We got a lot of our stuff there and just kind of dropped the money into the lighter tents and backpacks and all that. And then started backpacking our butts off. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a little bit about doing some research into these trails, you know, ahead of time. Are you a big planner, big logistics person? I imagine as a science and math person. Now, I was an English teacher, and I still enjoy the you know, the research and the preparation that goes into a hike. I enjoy that almost as much as I enjoy the hike, just thinking about it and gearing up and planning and doing all that kind of stuff. Are you of a similar mind?
Definitely. Love the planning.
And so what kinds of resources do you use? Are you spending a lot of time on YouTube? Are you going to websites? Do you buy books? How does it look for you?
Yes, to all those things. I probably prefer the books. I like having a book to read. And then kind of going to some websites and then finding the YouTube. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I usually start with books.
Okay. Now you started out as day hikers. You kind of dip your toe into backcountry type stuff and multi-day hikes. How does that evolve to doing something like the Great Divide Trail or even planning to do the PCT in the future?
So we usually in January each year. So since we've moved to Jasper, we've done more in our backyard, the Canadian Rockies, and Parks Canada opens up reservations for backcountry sites, usually in January. So that's usually when I'm sitting down and planning out what we're going to do for the summer. And last January, they postponed it because this fun pandemic we're in. They postponed the booking until April. So I was kind of just sitting around and I was going through my, I've got a couple of bookshelves with books and pulled out the Great Divide Trail book by Dustin Links and just started thumbing through it. And we'd had the book for a couple of years and section A through Waterton really kind of interested me. We've done a ton of day hikes and scrambles actually in Waterton. And just as I went through that, I'm like, okay, well, this would be really cool. And you don't need that section. You don't need too many actual parks reservations, which is nice because it's super competitive. So I really liked that section. And then I kept thumbing through and came across the section E, which goes through a lot of the Jasper section E goes through, and we've done a lot of it, but there were some, the beginning section that just sounded amazing. There's a spot called Michelle Lakes that is super beautiful. And so I'm like, oh, section E sounds really good. So I talked to Mark and I'm like, hey, section A and section E. He's like, yeah, sounds good. And then I kept studying through and I'm like, oh, section C sounds amazing. And we had done a lot of that one too in Banff, but there was a lot of kind of connectors that would just, we've talked about before. Hey, wouldn't it be cool if we connected these hikes? And it just like, you know, you connected them. And then it just like pinged in my mind. I'm like, well, Bridget, why don't you just hike from Waterton home to Jasper? Cause we have 8 weeks off. This is something that we can do. And so I posed it to Mark Semicolon, and I remember him kind of like laughing, like, yeah. And I remember thinking like, I don't know if he knows I'm serious. And then, but I just kind of went back to researching and all that. And then the next day I brought it up again and I'm like, hey, like I was kind of serious. Like, let's do this. I remember just kind of looked at me and I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm like, yeah, sure. So, so that was the first kind of version draft of the plan was to go from Waterton home to Jasper. And so I started making my spreadsheet and putting all the numbers in and figuring out days. And I realized that we would get to Jasper about halfway through August. So I was like, oh, okay, we'll have 2 weeks left. We can like hang out at home and, you know, bag a couple of peaks, etc. But then I kept flipping in the book and there was the north sections F and G, and started kind of crunching the numbers. I'm like, well, shoot, we'd have enough time to do that. And then we'd kind of invested all this time. We're like, well, if we're going to do the GDT, let's do the GDT. And so then, yeah, we decided to do the whole trail after that.
I've heard that the GDT, the GD and GDT also stands for something else besides Great Divide Trail.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. You said it. Hey, we covered a lot of ground right there. There's a lot to unpack. First thing I want to say is that, you know, in my experience, when I tell my spouse something and they're not, she's not sure if I'm joking or not, but she says, yes, I stop asking. I mean, I got the answer I wanted. Once you get the answer you want, you go with it. You are on solid ground. You can always go back and say, hey, I told you about it. You said yes. And so I planned. So suggestion there.
Yeah. Okay.
Stephanie Colin doesn't take it serious, but she says, yes. I mean, you've got the yes answer. Just go with it. Also, I want to talk about the reservation system in Canada, because I was talking to Maddie St. Arnaud up in, I forget which province, a few weeks ago. And he said, you know, I think our reservation system is crazier than the US's. And I said, that can't be possible. He went on to describe everything he had to do to hike the Great Divide Trail. And I said, yeah, you guys win. That is a crazy reservation system. Do you have to book individual campsites throughout the trail or different sections?
Yeah, like you can put through some of it in sections, and like there's one section that's particularly annoying because it should let you hook them up. There's, if anybody's done a GDT, they know it's called about ball pass down and up to Flow Lake for whatever reason. And like I know the GDT Association has, I think they've talked to Parks Canada about it, but in their computer program, it won't let you link those up, even though they're only 20 kilometers apart, 12 miles or whatever. So there's no reason why, but it always comes up with the like, oh, are you you can't do this. This is too hard, which like it is quite a bit of elevation down and up, but like, it's not bad. So what you have to do is just book into the two sections, like book the one section from Assiniboine up, and then you book into, so it's called the Rock Wall, Flow Lake and North. And it's annoying for two reasons, because now you have to pay the $11 reservation fee twice for each one of them. And then also because there's how many thousands of people at the same time trying to book in, time is of the essence. So you have to make sure that you get, and like you have to set up the, like, this is the trailhead, like night one, night two, like make sure the number of like 10 sites and everything and the date is right. And it's crazy. I literally sat down and practiced the night before to make sure that I could get it all in. And there's another section in the Jasper section where you have to, as you're doing it, you start in one trailhead, and then in order for it to pick up, you have to then go back and toggle the trailhead. And it gives you an error. This is why I practiced it. It gives you an error sign, but it lets you book it through to the skyline. So then you don't have to pay the extra $10. And I know it's only $10, but still, it all adds up, right?
Absolutely. Scrambles. I have to tell you, it's a good thing you teach pre-calc, because this sounds like a total nightmare. And I'm not sure that one part where the system told you, I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can make that hike. That's too far. So I don't think that, I don't know if that is, the system doesn't trust you, or the system is so nice, like Canadians are. They're so nice and thoughtful and caring about other people. The system just is built to say, are you sure? I'm not sure that you can make that. I think maybe you should rethink that.
Maybe. But yeah, reservations, crazy.
Sounds like a nightmare. And you were able to book the whole GDT?
I was, and the other thing about, so last year, they postponed it till April, and usually they split up, Banff, Yoho, Kootenay. Those three national parks have their own date, and then Jasper separate. And then there's another one, but, for the Canadian ones that you need for, the GDT, they separate them. But last year they decided to put them all on the same day, which, so April 16th, the great day of booking comes, and we had computers open. We had friends with computers open. You're laughing. And we managed to get, so out of all our like dozen computers, one of them was within a 10 minute wait. And you're distracting me because you're
sorry. I just have this pictured in my mind, this calendar on your wall with the date circled with in big red letters, the great day of booking. You right? Got all your computers up and running, multiple systems going, and one of them strikes gold.
Yep. And I was shaking as I was doing them, and you have to like sign in. And was there six we had to book, six different permits, or maybe it was eight, because then we had to actually phone some in too. There's some permits that aren't on the booking system. You actually have to phone and talk to somebody and convince them, yes, this is the route I want to take through this random, you know, remote piece of land. But I booked them all in, and I made a mark. I'm like, check my email. It was very stressful. And because I didn't want to sign out until I saw the permits in my email, because we've done that before where it looks all good, but then you don't get the email that you had the permit. And so we got all the emails that, yep, you've got these permits. We managed to get everything that we wanted. There's people out there that don't think kindly of us because they had to pull some big miles because they couldn't get their itinerary. But
the system didn't tell them, I don't think you can do that.
Yeah. Well, the practicing the night before, I think, was the key, like just like lightning fingers.
So I thought I had a sense of what the Canadian reservation system was when I talked to Maddie. I didn't at that time. Now I do. The fact that you had to do some online and you had to talk to some people on the phone, that is ludicrous. That is crazy. Silly. That is craziness.
Yeah. And then that's national parks. There's even some in the provincial park. So Kananaskis, that's a different booking system. And you have to wait. It's 90 days before you need to book. So like Mount Assiniboine and the Kananaskis section C, that's a different process that you have to do too. So
now, does Justin Trudeau, does the Prime Minister have a hotline that, you know, Canadian citizens can call and have stuff like this fixed?
Well, so we lucked out with this. So within like, I don't know, 8 minutes, I think I had everything that I signed out, and I literally fell to the ground and had myself a nice happy weep. And then I went and I started texting. So I was texting everyone. I'm like, we got it. And I started getting these texts and messages from my friends about them getting like booted out, and they kept getting an error and the circle of death, saying like, you know, like, yep, you've got it. Yep, you've got it. No, you don't, sucker. So all day, the system continually crashed. So there was a national uproar on April 16th last year. I'm sure there was phone calls and letters, unhappy letters. People were ticked off that they didn't get their permits. It's stupid.
Now, how many practice sessions did you have leading up to April 16th?
So two for sure. And then I trained a couple of my friends because it's just a random queue, right? So I'm like, what are the chances? Thank goodness that I did get it. But I was fully prepared to not be one of the ones that had one of the good computers. And so I had friends in different places, and I sat down with them and like showed them what to do. And they were so kind and so stressed out and just praying that they didn't get the one that was the, you know, the top. They were so, a lot of them, when I told them, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, I can't remember. Was it like 800 in line or something? Oh, 146. There we go. There's the number, guy. In line. And the other, like some of them were 17,000 in line. I think that was our highest one. We had a bunch in the 10,000s. So yeah, so lucky.
He scrambles on some of my episodes. I actually talk about hiking with people, but I'm having so much fun talking about the reservation system with you. This is fantastic. This is mind boggling. The fact that you had a nice happy weep at the end of the booking process. I mean, most people have their nice happy weep at the top of Katahdin or at the Mexican border or the Canadian border, whichever way they're going. You had your nice happy weep after you successfully booked the GDT.
Yep.
Amazing.
That was the hard part. Like, yeah, the hiking of it, that was easy peasy.
So I know you're planning on doing the PCT. When you arrange for that trip, I think you just have to book a start date, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's free. Like, what? How are we not doing this right? But there's the two booking dates, the one in November for all the northbounds, and then we had thought about it in November, like we should do this. And then we're just like, we're never going to get those weird months off work. And I know that you can finish it before September, but I just didn't like the possibility. Like there's too many variables over 4,300 kilometers to be like, yes, I will be back to work September 1st. So we kind of were like, maybe not, maybe another time. And then had like immediate regret that we decided not to. So started doing research and figuring out that, okay, like if we go southbound, it kind of opens it up for us as teachers to, you know, a slightly more convincing sell to our board to let us go. But yeah, so then the next booking was January 11th, I think. And yeah, there's 15 permits for southbound that get released each day. And so same thing, had all the computers, actually less computers. I just had,
Did you have the date circled on your calendar and you had some practice runs ahead of time?
Yep. Yes. And out of all the computers, luckily it worked out. I think that it was right before lunch hour. So I was at school with my laptop set up, and actually our friend, Sean, he's doing the PCT. We met him on the GDT and he had his northbound permit. So he was like, "Ooh, I'll help you out because I've been through the process." And he got two browsers that, because of course you have to book each permit, which I guess that's a positive thing about the Canada Parks booking system, is that you can book, like you just have to say that two people, one tent site, and then it's $10, or I think it's like maybe $10 or $11 per person.
Does the system ask you, are you really staying together? Do the two of you know each other?
Yeah. Are you sure? You need a safe word. Yeah. But, So Sean actually hooked us up with the two, which super freaking grateful for that. But yeah, but in comparison, much, much less painful process.
Did you have a nice happy weep at the end of booking your PCT?
A little bit. I was sitting in, because it was lunchtime, so I was sitting at my computer and I was like laughing and kind of like at the same time weeping because I was just so excited. So yeah, it was a more giddy this time round.
Got it. Okay. So you've been to Glacier, you've done the Great Divide Trail. You've been in the Wind River Range.
Yeah.
We have to hear a hiking story any one of those experiences. Pick something fun, entertaining, scary, moment, whatever you decided to share with us and tell us a story.
Okay. That's a lot. Probably go with our, so many, the GDT, the snowing, probably, I don't know. Okay. I'll go with this one. Cause it's kind of, it's like fun to look back on. It's one of those memories where like, yay, I didn't die.
Is Semicolon so, doing charades in the background there?
He's kind of going like, what are you going to pick? Yeah. But, yeah, so we're in section, I think this was section G still. The crossover from section G to F is subtle. There's no real like resupply at that section. Anyway, so super remote. We're talking lots of route finding, lots of hiking through willows and friggin' willows. I've never had to hike through so many willows and so much bog. I didn't know that kind of like suckage could actually happen, but it did. But I'm sure I'm better for it. At least I'll say I am. So we were hiking a section that we were supposed to take this high route because it sounded amazing, especially compared to the alternate of the soul-sucking Jackpine River, which is the actual Great Divide route. But it just didn't sound like a good time. All the reports were talking about like multiple river crossings and all the bog and copious amounts of willows, et cetera. And so this Perseverance high route sounded right up our alley. So that's what we had booked in. And at the time we were actually hiking with someone we met on trail who ended up is now a very good friend of ours. Nicole Trash Panda is her trail name. She's also done the PCT. And so we were hiking with Nicole, and we woke up at the campsite that was the day that we were going to transition up to the high route. And when we went to bed that night, we had put, there's a river crossing immediately after, and we had put rocks down as a marker, and we're like, we'll see how far down the river goes in the morning. And then in the morning we go out there and we're like, where's the rocks? And the river had risen overnight because of all the precipitation. And so you could see up on the mountains, and there's all this fresh snow on the mountains. This was about August 20th, I think. And it's not uncommon, of course, for it to snow in the mountains in August or even July. We've had snow then too. You just don't want it to be when you're about to go up, you know, a couple thousand meters into the Alpine on some scrambly sections. So we decided that we had the Garmin, the InReach. So we each of us checked the weather report, and it was supposed to precipitate all day, copious amounts too. So we're like, well, okay, that pretty much nails, you know, the coffin shut there. We're taking the low route. We have to, we shouldn't go up high when there's all these kind of warning bells going off. So committed to this and crossed the river. The river was, I had to hike my pack right up. It came up to my waist. And what was that river called?
Pauline
Creek. She was deep. Anyway, and so started the hike up to the crest, which had about a 60-second good view before the clouds came back in again. And it was actually on that day, so we had flip-flopped. So we kept meeting fellow Northbounders that we had met, come across in our first sections. So it was kind of cool because we got to high-five everyone. I'm like, hey, you're almost there. So that was cool. We saw a bunch of people that day. And so down to the river instead of going back up. And it started to rain heavier at around, 11 o'clock. And we just kept going. And the Great Divide Trail Association, lovely volunteer people, they had actually just come in recently and cut down all the willows. So there's this willow carnage that's just very satisfactory after all the willow bashing that we had done in the northern section. So that was lovely until about, 3 o'clock. Time was kind of a big old weird thing that day, just because it just rained all day. And we were kind of bummed out because we had to take the lower section. Some people really like the jack pine, or at least they say they do. I think it's the whole cold soak. I think they've just convinced themselves that they like it. But anyway, so we finally got to the part of that section that they had no longer cleared the trail. So we're back into willows that I've never hiked in willows like that before. They were taller than both of us. They're about eight feet tall and completely crisscrossed across the trail. So you're pushing through. So it's a full body experience and it's raining, remember? So there's no dry, not even the option of being dry. So pushing through this and getting the willow wap to the face, etc. And we had kept okay spirits until it started to snow. Because of course we're soaking wet and now it's snowing. And that was around 6 o'clock in the evening, I think. And so we're like, okay, just keep moving and we'll be okay. And we were all wearing our rain gear and gloves, not that it mattered, but because of course everything was wet. But anyway, so the entire, as we had come down to the river, that entire section of trail, we were following beside it. And there was one campsite about at the halfway mark. We're like willows. And then there was this opening and you could see where people had put their tent. And we're like, oh, this is the tent site. Cool. But we still had over a half day to travel. So we're through the willows. It's snowing on us. We're following the river and all of a sudden we literally jumped, Nicole and Mark jumped. I found a log to go across because these knees don't jump. And that was the mistake. We should not have crossed that little ravine that was super deep. But it just, it seemed like this little, it was just really like a deer trail that we were following, like a game trail. And we had like, we used the Far Out app. And so but you know, when it's raining and you're trying to like negotiate on your phone, and that's annoying. So we had kind of used that sparsely. Anyway, we, all of a sudden we realized that the river's coming back on itself, and we're like, what the what? So we get the app out, and we have hiked into like an elbow of the river. And so we have to we have to backtrack is what we have to do. And so none of us are impressed at this point, because we're just frozen. My hands were so cold. I'm like, hey, Nicole, can you close this on my bag? And she's like, okay. And I look at her hands and they're like purple. I'm like, oh my God, like, never mind. And so we cut across, so back to loop to find the trail that didn't exist. And we were at this point, half a kilometer from the camp that we were supposed to be at. It was a horse camp. We knew that we could have a fire. We're like, let's just get to camp. Anyway, so we looped around and we had to try to find back, because we didn't want to cross the river if we could avoid it, because we didn't, I mean, at that point, like, how wet more could we have gotten? But yeah, and we actually came across, all, we just like screech on the brakes, and there's this little clearing where it was big enough that you could actually put a couple of tents down. And we all kind of pause, and obviously all thinking the same thing of like, oh damn, like we could camp here. But we're like, no, like we're so close. Like we want to have a fire and, you know, not camp on like the hummocky ground, et cetera. So we're like, let's push on. So for some reason, and there's many signs of, are you thinking clearly? Like Parks Canada should have come on and been like, are you sure you want to do that? Cause we might not have, but, so Mark gave me his phone, which had been glitching out. So I'm not sure why that decision was made by us, but whatever. So I have his phone, and Nicole's leading us out of this devil's loop. And so I'm watching, and all of a sudden on the phone, I'm watching and I'm like, oh, like we need to go this way. And I remember Nicole saying, like, are you sure? I'm like, well, that's what the phone says, you know, technology. So we go, and I don't even remember the point where I don't even remember, but all of a sudden I do remember yelling at the top of my lungs a very powerful curse word into the air, because I realized I had looked down. I'm like, oh yeah, we're doing good, guys. And then all of a sudden the little marker goes bloop, and we're back in the freaking elbow. And I had looked up, and they were realizing this, like, wait a tick, like this looks familiar. And yeah, so we had worked our freaking way back to the same spot that we were at, because there's no trail, like there's no way to figure out. So we're like, oh my goodness. And I felt like an ass, because I'm like the idiot, like, yeah, we're going the right way, guys. Anyway, so we loop back around. We kind of didn't, I think we were just all mad and not verbose. And we get back to this empty little tiny plot of land again. And at that point,
it doesn't look so bad at this point.
It looked pretty freaking good. And my breathing, I've never experienced the beginning symptoms of hypothermia, but I was there. I was like, I think we should stop here. And Nicole's hands, Mark's hands were like useless. So we're all like opening up our bags, like, you know. And so we put our tents up as fast as possible and got in, stripped out of our wet clothes, and stayed there for the night. And every couple, I don't know, 45 minutes or an hour and a half or so, we had to push the snow off our tents because it kept collapsing in. And we joked about in the morning, that's how we knew each other was alive, because we would hear Nicole like bump, 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 bump. And we're like, oh, it's time. Thump, 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 thump. And so none of us got a very good sleep that night, to say the least. And I think Nicole's bag was wet. Mark's bag was wet. Mine was dry. I was comfy. But yeah, it was an interesting night. And we woke up, and there was about, I don't know, 4 inches of snow had accumulated on the ground, which was disheartening. And it was still snowing. So we just like talking through our tents decided that we would just stay. There's no point in packing all our wet gear up, our wet and cold gear up to push for the, we talked about, well, maybe we should go to the horse camp and have a fire. And like, well, but then we're just gonna be more miserable. So we hung out in our tents for the day. The least bad thing about ditching on the high route. I mean, also, like, I'm sure that would have been, we would have had to press the SOS button, I think, up there, because if we were getting this much snow down here,
yeah, like, that'd have been serious. Definitely
not, you know, an improvement. And, but because we had planned to go the high route, we had an extra day built in. So we took a 0 day on, we called it Winter Island, took a 0 day on Winter Island. And, we don't, like, in the Rockies, you don't eat in your tent. You don't cook food in your tent. Cause you know, there's grizzly bears and other things. And yeah, we had how many coffees that day? We played cards in our tent, laughed at our situation.
So Scrambles, I have to apologize to maybe our listeners out there who are tuning in for the first time and are considering doing thru hiking, because you're not doing a real good sell job here. I mean, this does not sound like a lot of fun. This is what's known as type two fun. This is
definitely
type two fun. You're not having fun while it's happening, but you have fun talking about it afterwards, because, like,
yeah,
I survived this.
Exactly.
And I just have to point out the many different funny phrases that you just shared with us, you know. willow carnage, the willow whap to the face, soul sucking jack pine river, is it river route? Soul sucking. I get that. My favorite though is what the what, you know. I want to say at the end of the story, what the what? I mean, what?
Oh my god, there's lots of what the what's that section. Mm-hmm. But yeah. But we survived. So, you know, type two fun is usually survivable. Fun. But it finally stopped snowing at about 1:30. And because we'd look out and we're like, oh, okay, I think it's raining now. And we're like, is that better? And then finally at 1:30, 2:30, it actually stopped. And there was a moment where the sun came out. And it was this glorious moment. And we got out of our tents and we're all wearing like our pajama jams. And we're just like, we're dancing and, you know, rejoicing and looking like, I'm sure, crazy people. And so we set out strings and dried our stuff like 10%.
That's the added bonus of camping in snow or rain is the extra 5 to 7 pounds you get to carry in water the next day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, so then, yeah, we kind of, it was nice to be outside of the tents since we had been there for, you know, a good 16 or 18 hours. And yeah, we went and we filtered water, and there was actually a really nice beach. I mean, it wasn't nice when we got there the first two times, cause it meant we were lost, not lost. I don't like to use that word. You're
just covering the ground again. Yeah.
Misplaced. Yeah. And so that we found some dead wood and had a nice fire there. And we're pretty sure we're not supposed to have a fire here, but like, come and get us, like, really come and get us. But so yeah,
please, like, please come and get us.
Yeah, please come and get us. Yeah, bring beer. But yeah, we had a fun little, we made it a fun time. We can laugh about it now. There were, like, throughout the night, we're like, ah, crap, are we going to have to like, you never want to be the one that has to push the SOS button, right? Like, it's there, you've got it just in case, but nobody wants to push it. So we were just like, oh man. So we were really happy that we didn't have to push the SOS button and that we all lived, and we dried out our stuff pretty good with our little tiny campsite fire. And it was the best of times and it was the worst of times.
You know what I'm wondering is you're there, you're knocking the snow off the top of your tent. At some point, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., I mean, does nature call? I mean, that's just got to be terrible in either rain or snow to have to, oh man, bladder, can't you Can't you cough right just once and let me sleep through the night?
You never find out how full you can fill that thing until you're in a tent and it's snowing outside. Yeah, that was horrible. And of course, so yeah, we had like Nicole had the trees, like she's like, don't go into those trees. And we had the set of trees that, you know, Nicole didn't go into. And yeah, it makes for a full, you know, full rounded adventure.
Okay. All right. Well, we got the one story in, and it was quite a story. So thank you for that. We know you have your southbound PCT hike coming up. What's the date of your departure?
I think it's July 3rd. We're hoping, July 3rd. We're going to hit, I mean, who knows, hopefully, fingers crossed, like with the forest fires, but we're hoping to get in Hart's Pass and then go up, tag the border, and then start heading south.
Okay. Hey, let's take just a minute. I want to talk a little bit about your blog / website, the Rocky Mountain Scrambler. Tell us about it. If someone were to visit your website, what can they expect to find there?
So on my website, lots of pretty pictures. So some people actually buy my photography because I'm surrounded by beautiful things. So it's, you know, you just
you're bound to get lucky once in a while,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So there's the pretty pictures, and then there's kind of more the adventure pictures, and those are the ones that are dear to my heart because they've got the stories behind it and all those happy moments, and so. So the pretty pictures. And then I did start, writing my blog. I did, I kept a trail journal, throughout, cause I wanted to make sure that I documented,
Can we find this story on the blog?
Yeah. So if you go to the blog, I've only done the, why are you laughing now?
This story that you just told. I mean, the one you just told, can we read through that and just re-experience that with you?
All the what the what's. So not yet, because I've kind of overextended myself, which is I tend to do that. So I want to do this, the trail, like the blog, with all the pictures, but I've taken like thousands of pictures. So I think section A is up on the blog. So the Waterton to Coleman section. And then I've been spending more time because I also took tons of video footage on my phone. And so I've been putting together YouTube videos of, I was going to do just sections. That was the original goal. But I'm a little heavy on the trigger there. So I've got tons of footage. So I decided after much procrastination because of the overwhelming amount of footage I had, and I don't know where to start. I just decided to do day by day and break it down that way. And I became much more productive by, you know, tiny little bites. So on my YouTube channel, Rocky Mountain Scrambler, I've got them organized into episodes. So episodes like A1 through 7, and then B, and then C, et cetera. So I'm about halfway through C on my YouTube episodes. And then I will eventually get back to typing it all out on my blog, which I'm sure will be the day before I leave for the PCT.
And then you can start all over again. Yeah. And that's the beautiful thing about being an organized person. You know, organization helps you chunk that stuff into manageable bites. So
exactly.
Yeah. It can get overwhelming if otherwise. Yeah. All right. Hey, Scrambles, you know where we are?
Are we at the end?
Not quite the end, but we are at that time of the episode where I ask you for your pro tip inside of the week. What nugget of trail wisdom do you have to share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better?
So this one's one that's obvious to me, but I've hiked with different people and it's not evidently obvious to other people, but to stop and enjoy the surroundings. So one of our favorite things that we do like halfway through the day, and sometimes we decide at the beginning of the day, like this is where we're going to stop. We stop and we boil up some water and we have coffee and we sit and enjoy wherever we are, and usually take off our shoes, dry off our socks, spread out the tent, like have a yard sale there, and just to dry everything out. And it just really helps kind of, I think, with the kind of mental aspect of, I don't know, just stopping and actually enjoying it. And I find like I remember like the day better when you have that chunk of time where you're just sitting and enjoying things. And yeah, so that's what I would say. Stop and have a coffee.
Okay. Are you going to be able to do that on the PCT? Are you going to feel the pressure of having to make those miles? Are you going to be able to enjoy it?
I really hope so. I think that we will, and not just because both being teachers, we're both highly addicted to coffee and we'll need to. But I don't know. And like, when I look at the miles that we have to cover, and I thought we did real good on the GDT. And then when I started reading people's trail report of the PCT, I was like, oh, wow. Like, we're going to have to step it up a notch. But any of the people that I talked to that have hiked the PCT, when they were hiking the GDT, they said that the GDT was quite a bit more challenging. So I'm hoping that we'll find the PCT easier and be able to cover those miles, which means being able to stop and have a coffee and enjoy it. So yeah, I hope so.
Now, Scrambles, this was so much fun that I want to try and pin you down on a 0 day when you're in Wi-Fi range on the PCT. We can do an episode from the trail.
That would be awesome.
What do you think?
Yep.
Okay. Definitely. All right. Let's do that. Okay. All right. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Scrambles. Want to thank her for joining us this week. Scrambles, I know you just mentioned it, but how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
So I'm probably most active on Instagram and then YouTube. I do have a photography page on Facebook too. And of course a TikTok, all Rocky Mount Scrambler. And then the website at rockymountscrambler.com is those places there. That's where you can find me.
Okay. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Do you follow me on TikTok? I need to follow you.
Okay. I went on TikTok because of course my kids are like, oh, you should go on TikTok. And I'm like, right. Okay. And then they got really mad at me because I like right away got 17,000 followers and they're like, what? And like, you know,
holy smoke, 17,000 like followers.
Cool teacher. But it takes so much time. Like Instagram's kind of what, I could do a whole episode on that. So that's where I spend most of my time, but yeah, in making my videos, I have to like, every time I upload one, I have to free a bunch of like room on my phone. And so TikTok was one of the ones that got kicked to the can. So I'll eventually upload that one again and get back.
Okay. All right. Also, if you have comments or clips you want to share with us, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com. Scrambles, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, some kind of outdoor adventure media to keep our listeners connected to the trail during the off season here. Call this our adventure media recommendation. What do you have for us?
Well, besides my wonderful videos, of course, I really like the book. It's called Blisters, but it's Bliss, like B-L-I-S-S, by an author about the Pacific Crest Trail. I think the last name is Franz. Darn it. Sorry. Blisters.
And, Blisters with two S's.
With two S's, like Bliss. Yeah.
Actually three S's with, you know, the third one being at the end.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I was like, okay. No, yeah, at the end. I really enjoyed that book. It just kind of spoke to me. I've kind of, you know, when you're reading a book and you're just like, you feel like you've bonded with the author. That's how I felt with that. And then I love all the, like Quadzilla, who you just had on. I've been enjoying his Southbound YouTube videos, and Darwin and Dixie, all the usual ones. Love their videos.
Quadzilla, he's going for the calendar year triple crown. Yeah,
that just blows my mind.
That's crazy
awesome. But
crazy awesome. There have been more people that have walked on the moon than have done the calendar year triple crown.
Wow, that's significant. Wow. Yeah. I want to do that.
You want to walk on the moon?
No. Well, I would if that was offered to me, but I would rather walk on the earth.
Okay. So Blisters, check it out. And one more segment before we wrap things up. I've got a segment called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About?
Okay.
Did we miss anything?
I mean, I also broke my ankle once I found the last piece of ice in Jasper and slipped and broke my ankle on it, April, 2020. So at the fun height of COVID there. And, so was terrified in April, like that's really close to hiking season. So, was just super scared that I was going to have to scrap my, hiking season, but, managed to break it hard enough that they had to put a plate and six screws on it. So rehabbed actually pretty good. So there's another tip. If you ever break a bone, make sure you do it good enough so that they actually have to brace it with metal, because you heal way quicker. And yeah, we did, I think 600 kilometers. Was it all summer we did 600 kilometers? It was a good summer despite my broken ankle. So if you're, you know, if you
was
have
that,
an injury.
Was that on your fibula?
It was.
Yes. Right leg or left leg?
Left leg.
Scrambles. I don't know how to tell you this. I also had a steel plate and 6 screws in my left fibula from a hockey injury. Yes.
Oh, hockey.
Hockey.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah. It's not like real hockey, cause it was in Southern California and I picked it up as an adult. You know, I was 20 years old at the time. Okay. As adult amateur hockey. It was a semblance of hockey, vaguely resembling some form of hockey, but yeah, I broke it playing hockey. I usually leave out that whole explanation part. I just say I broke up playing hockey and people think that, you know, I'm kind of tough. So
you're an athlete. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Scrambles?
Well, of course, Mark, the best hiking partner ever. And we had a couple of friends this year that supported us, like brought us our packages, hiked in packages twice for us, Chris and Kirsty. My GDT hiking family, Trash Pan and Nicole and Sean, and just all, we call it the Scramble Squad. I did not come up with that. Stevie and Haley and Jonesy. Love hiking with y'all.
Okay. Thank you for tuning in. Always remember the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you and Semicolon have just suffered through hours of willow bashing and hiking into the elbow of the river. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.